Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're talking inflation. Inflation data has recently been weak around the US, Eurozone and the UK. Is that the real picture? And what does the situation mean for central banks? And can they keep monetary policy easy or easier for longer? We'll get the view of our global panel of experts here on The Bulletin with UBS. We start with Paul Donovan, Global Chief Economist at UBS Wealth Management. Inflation data has been weak around the United States. I guess if we look across the Eurozone, here in the UK as well, what's going on?
In reality, inflation isn't that weak. We have entered into a low inflation world compared, say, with the 1970s or the 1980s or even the early 90s. But when we look at the inflation numbers today, most inflation measures are around about where they've been on average for the last 20 years. I think part of the problem, though, is that many people in financial markets have this idea that inflation should be 5 or 6% or something like that, when in fact it's generally hovering around 2 to 2.5% for the headline measures at least. So I would argue that we've got fairly normal inflation rates at the moment with some upside risk as we look ahead. But we have people who haven't perhaps fully recognized that we've moved into a structurally lower inflation environment as a result of central bank policies for the last 30 years.
Is this perception of recent weakness an accurate reading? And if so, what's going on? Here's Ricardo Garcia, head of European macroeconomics in the UBS Wealth Management CIO in Zurich.
Yes, inflation obviously has shown signs of weaknesses as of late. This has mainly been driven by the effect of weakening oil prices. We had a big rebound in oil price earlier this year, which has faded as the OPEC agreement hasn't really helped to push up prices further beyond $50. And as a consequence, you have seen a correction below $50. The result is that gasoline and diesel prices have fallen significantly in the Eurozone, and they constitute a relatively small part of the consumer inflation basket, but a very volatile one. So even though it only makes up a small part of what we spend as a consumer, the volatility means that it feeds through to the headline inflation rate, and this is what we have seen basically with inflation rates coming down. Nonetheless, and this is the second part of the answer, inflation rates have still increased substantially compared to recent years. If you look at the average inflation rate for the last three calendar years, it was barely above 0%. And for this year, we are still expecting 1.5%. So it has come down as of late, yes, but it's still significantly above what we are used to in recent years.
Brian Rose is Senior Economist Americas in the UBS Wealth Management CIO. There are three things going on when it comes to weak inflation data, according to Brian.
First, you've had some one-off big price declines. For example, in wireless phone charges, down around 10%. And then second, there are some cyclical forces. For example, pace of rent inflation has slowed recently because we've built more rental housing. And auto sales have peaked out, which is putting some downward pressure on auto prices. And then third, you have structural forces on what some people call the Amazon effect, which is the online retailers. They have a lower cost model, able to supply goods and services more cheaply. And then there are things like college tuition, which for basically my entire lifetime have been increasing faster than overall inflation. And now that college tuition has slowed down to around the same pace as everything else. And so with these three factors combined, you've had some very weak inflation numbers recently.
And Brian, I wonder, what do these, particularly those three factors, what does all that mean for central banks? How does these phenomena you've described, how does that shape their thinking, or how should it shape their thinking as we move forwards?
Creates a bit of a difficult situation, especially for the Fed, because economic conditions are quite strong. The labor market is already very tight. So normally the Fed would just go on raising interest rates, but now because the inflation data is so weak, it makes it hard to do that. It's a real conundrum for them. Normally you would expect the tight labor market to generate higher inflation, and it's just not happening. So it makes it very difficult for the Fed to decide on policy.
Brian's addressed the next key question there. What does all this mean for central banks? Paul Donovan mentioned central banks in his introduction. What does the structural change and new environment that he described previously mean for central banks? Well, there are three main issues here, as he explains.
The first point to bear in mind, and this is very important, is that central banks aren't trying to tackle inflation today. They're trying to tackle inflation in early 2019 because most central bank policy operates with a 12 to 18 month lag. So central banks are going to try and anticipate where we're going with inflation in the future, which is why they don't get too worried about some of the short-term movements that we see. The second problem central banks have got to deal with is the fact that in a structurally lower inflation environment, statistical quirks, weird changes, can actually have a quite large impact on the headline inflation rate. The most notable thing is in the United States recently, where changes to telephone charging systems have led to inflation falling by 0.3 or 0.4% in year-on-year terms. Now, a 0.3, 0.4% reduction in inflation isn't that big a deal if your average inflation rate is 6. But if your average inflation rate is 2, then this is a really meaningful change. So central banks are now more subject to anomalies in inflation in the short term. And then the third issue that central banks have got to tackle is when they're thinking about policy responses to inflation, they've actually got three levers that they can pull. There's the monetary policy, the interest rates that we're all familiar with. There's the quantitative policy, that's the bond buying program. And then there's also regulation of the financial sector, which will ultimately have an impact on inflation. And I think central banks are debating what is the appropriate combination of these three policy pillars to tackle the sort of normal inflation levels that we find ourselves with today.
All these various factors, oil prices and so on, what does this mean for central banks and their strategy going forward? Ricardo Garcia again.
Central banks have made their mind up. If you look at the expectations of the market, but also our expectations, is that a number of central banks are looking for an exit of easy monetary policy. Just let me name a few of them. The ECB is discussing tapering, even if they may not admit it formally. But we had, for example, today a comment from board member Novotny from the ECB saying that the ECB is studying how the Federal Reserve communicated tapering in 2013, indicating that this is a clear topic there. Then we have the Federal Reserve that has just this week again made more concrete indications about reducing its balance sheet and is already increasing interest rates, has already started with that. And also a number of smaller central banks like the Bank of Canada is on its way out, or the New Zealand Bank, even the Central Bank of Australia, we think that would also start increasing interest rates by the end of next year, and also the Swiss National Bank.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll consider whether central banks can keep monetary policy easy or easier for longer, and we'll ask our panel to consider the global picture. Adrian Zurcher is with the UBS CIO in Hong Kong. He's head of asset allocation in Asia. We asked him, can central banks keep monetary policy easy for longer?
Well, the monetary policy is very easy, but what we now see, we have the first synchronized pickup since the great financial crisis. We can see that the global economy is doing better. And we can feel that a lot of central banks, in particular the Fed, want to start to reverse some of the very unorthodox measures they have taken after the great financial crisis. So monetary policy will stay loose, but the tightening bias will definitely come in, and some of the central banks will take the opportunity of the better macroeconomic environment to start to reduce excess liquidity in the system.
So can central banks keep monetary policy easy or easier for longer in Paul Donovan's view?
If we look at the United States, the Federal Reserve's interest rate increases have been very, very moderate, and they have barely managed to keep track of inflation. So if you look at the real or the inflation-adjusted Fed funds interest rate, that hasn't moved in a couple of years. So we're not seeing aggressive tightening on the monetary policy side. But what we are seeing is the Federal Reserve having, I think, a very sensible conversation about tightening the quantitative policy support that it has been offering. And I think that that means that if the Fed is prepared to tighten on the quantitative policy side, it doesn't have to be so aggressive in tightening on monetary policy. I think it will still tighten monetary policy because real interest rates are, I think, too low given the inflation outlook, but they can mix and match their policies, and they don't have to be so aggressive on monetary policy when other options are available.
Would Ricardo Garcia say that perhaps it's a question of looking, for example, at the mix? Can central banks keep monetary policy easy that way?
Yes, they could if the conditions warranted it. But truth is, if you look at the global purchasing manager indices, for example, a measure of economic activity in the real economy, they've improved quite a bit across the globe. So we are in a global upswing this year. And this is actually enticing central banks to basically look for an exit from easy monetary policy. But again, if the situation would change, then there would still be scope and room to ease monetary policy further. But that's not exactly consistent with the backdrop now. If you take the Eurozone, for example, growth is running at almost 2% as of late. The IFO in Germany, another survey for business activity in Europe's most important economy, has even reached an all-time high, just to name a few examples.
So what's the verdict on options out there ahead for the Fed and others, according to Brian Rose?
Well, certainly for the central banks that are just targeting inflation, if inflation's too low, then it means you keep policy looser. And I should emphasize, you know, this isn't bad news. We shouldn't be too, you know, as an ordinary citizen, you should be happy that inflation is lower. It means that, you know, your income is going further. Again, makes life difficult for the central banks, but generally speaking, I think this is a sign that technological progress is helping to keep inflation lower, and this is actually good news.
Next, where's the most interesting inflation story on a geographical basis? Well, look east, says Paul Donovan.
Well, actually, I think the most interesting inflation story, from an economist's point of view at least, comes in Japan. Because when we look at Japan, we have some real issues emerging. The first is that Japan has very high inflation expectations by consumers and very high inflation perceptions by consumers. Japanese consumers think inflation in Japan is a lot higher than it is. And that raises a question. Should the central bank really be trying to raise inflation expectations when the Japanese consumer already thinks inflation is at 3.5% or 4%? The consumer's wrong, but that doesn't make a difference. The relationship between inflation and unemployment is also very clear in Japan, what's sometimes called the Phillips curve, that as unemployment goes down, inflation goes up. And in Japan, that relationship is still very, very strong, and we are starting to see wage gains come through, particularly for part-time workers, as a result of tightness in the labor force, and that's eventually going to start pushing through into higher prices as well. So there's an interesting example there of traditional relationships still holding on. And then with the aging population in Japan, Japan's older population are experiencing higher inflation than other people. So aging in Japan is actually contributing to rising inflation pressures. And so this combination of structural changes in a country where we've never really been considering inflation for many years, I think means that Japan could be one of the interesting test cases for inflation in the years ahead.
And so east, we do look to Japan, as Paul Donovan suggested there. Here's a postcard from Tokyo, a Monocle's Asia editor-at-large Kenji Hall, mulling the picture there in terms of inflation.
How hard can it be to get prices to rise by 2%? Apparently, very hard. In Japan, the government and central bank have been doing everything possible to encourage companies to pay higher wages and to charge higher prices on everything from beef bowls to tickets on the Shinkansen. But they haven't had much success. The central bank is hoping for 2% inflation by the fiscal year that starts next April. Nobody thinks that's realistic. Central bankers, policymakers, economists, they've been telling the public the same thing for years. Japan needs inflation. Without it, growth stays flat. The problem is the Japanese public is so used to prices and wages staying the same that when companies or restaurants or fashion brands decide to lift prices, it's met with concern. How is anyone going to afford the extra cost? Anytime someone raises prices here, it's national news. Last year, when Akagi hiked the price of its signature ice lollies, Garigari-kun, by 10 yen from 60 yen to 70 yen, it posted a video online to apologize. More recently, Japan's two biggest delivery services, Yamato Transport and Sagawa Express, said they would charge higher prices for package deliveries. For the economy, that should be good news. Yes, inflation is right around the corner. But at the moment, it's nothing to rejoice about. If Japanese consumers hunker down and spend less, it could be a while before economists and policymakers get the growth that they're hoping for.
And that's Kenji Hall, bringing us to the end of this 147th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at the website or catch up via your preferred platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.